Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassam. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. We're beginning a day-long retreat. So we'll be practicing together. And as always, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's very good to see you taking the time and setting aside a Sunday. And it's not just an effort that we make, is it? You also have to make arrangements with the people around you and even the animals around you and get their cooperation to be able to set aside a day like this. So there's a lot of ways that our practice kind of draws others in. And that's wonderful, yeah. This is what we mean by merit. Everybody gets to benefit when somebody makes an effort. And today is particularly special because we get to cover a topic which, unlike many of the topics we've covered on our day longs, where somebody finds a word that they find really interesting, and it turns out it's only like it only shows up twice in the entire Pali Canon. And then we get to, dig up some references and try to explain what it is. Well, today we're covering the topic of Nirodha or cessation, which is the third noble truth. So this shows up in the Pali Canon a lot. In fact, you could open one of the Book of the Nikayas and just randomly open to a page, and you're probably on a sutta that will contain the word Nirodha somewhere in it. There's a couple of very popular places where Nirodha cessation comes up. Notably, the third noble truth, right? The third noble truth goes, Yo tassa yeva tanhaya asesa viraga Nirodha sankhara Nirodho chago patinissago muti analeyo. Did I add in that sankhara? Well, we do we do dependent origination every day. Well, that's the second one, dependent origination, which is very also very commonly chanted. Avijja Nirodha, Sankhara Nirodho, Sankhara Nirodha, Vijnana Nirodho, and so on, so on. So in dependent origination, it's we have ignorance conditions volition conditions consciousness, but then we always do the reverse order. Always say with the cessation of ignorance comes the cessation of volition, with the cessation of volition comes the cessation of consciousness, and so on and so on. But to go back to the third noble truth and break it down, this is, I mean, it's one of the noble truths. And when it is the noble truth of Nirodha, Nirodha, cessation. So it has the name of this word that we're going to be looking at. And it is specifically in the third noble truth dealing with craving, tanha, thirst, desire, which is ceasing. And the third noble truth goes with the cessation of that craving, which the Buddha talks about in the second noble truth, and he uses the word asesa, which means without remainder, without residue, without crumbs. And then he says, the what is it? The giving away of it, the freedom from it, complete independence from it. These are the Buddha is reiterating, it's not just that it went away, but that you're completely and utterly and without remainder, without residue, liberated from that thing. And so the Buddha uses the word Nirodha in two basic ways in the Pali Canon. One is it just shows up, there's a basic concept of things ceasing, ending, being destroyed, obliterated, completed. That can be applied to just about anything. The Buddha also tends to use it in this way with craving or towards the noble truth, the destruction of basically the causes of suffering, in which case it often shows up in a list that goes disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, which is usually followed by vimutti of freedom and the knowledge of freedom. Yeah, and this shows up again and again in the suttas. When the Buddha is talking about enlightenment, often it is preceded by disenchantment and dispassion. It goes through cessation, like the cause of craving has to actually cease for you to be free of suffering. And then it goes to the actual experience of liberation, the complete separation. Yeah, and this concept of cessation, which I will keep saying cessation, and there's no way to stop it, but we will talk about why this is a not a great word for this concept. We'll get to that in a minute, but also to acknowledge that I tend to lean towards tradition. So we started saying cessation, and cessation is technically it's a pretty accurate translation by the book meaning of it. It just misses kind of how it lands in the mind. Yeah. But when we talk about cessation, this is just what we're looking at. This is the crux of the matter. And this at this very moment in meditation centers across the Western Hemisphere right now, because it's daytime is starting, but really all over the world. People are sitting down to meditate. People are in these meditation retreats. They're off in meditation cabins. They're sitting down in meditation groups and they sit and they meditate. And I've met people who can practice for 10, 20, 30 years. And at the end of it, just get kind of disillusioned and be like, what was that all for? And then go off and be a Christian and just be like, isn't it so great? I have somebody who'll has my back. Yeah, will just love me no matter what. And I don't have to do anything. I just have to believe. And that's all well and good. But then the question can arise, and those people who are still in that meditation phase, like, how did that happen? What vitamin were they not getting from this practice that they could have just kind of wasted away and went off? And what we find is the other three noble truths can be pursued and understood and really even to some degree abandoned. But if we don't have a personal experience of cessation, if we don't understand cessation and what it means in the context of the Buddha's teaching, then we will never know for ourselves what it is this teaching is for. But at that moment where we understand cessation, where we understand the end of something, the remainderless, residueless end of something, then we no longer need other people to tell us what this practice is about. And when one attains to actual strong faith in the Buddha's teaching, such that they really can't be talked out of it for the rest of their lives, they're going to, in some way, try to keep developing their understanding of this. It is because of cessation. Now, in some ways, people see this as a huge, shining light moment of revelation. But as we'll kind of look at today, it's more essential than that. And it has to be more continuous than that. You're not meditating hard every day, focusing on the breath, trying to drown out thoughts, hoping that someday you will have a bright flash realization of cessation. No, you, in order for your meditation to produce the wisdom that will free you have to be looking at cessation constantly. You have to be attending to it, thinking about it, and realizing it, which is our duty towards this noble truth. With that said, it's a bunch of my words. Why not use a couple of the Buddha's words for a moment? We have here, share this with everybody. Okay, this is coming from Suttanapata 3.12, and Rachel found this for us. And this is here at the end. So the Suttanapata is very interesting, and a lot in this collection is early teachings of the Buddha. And this is before they had lists, before they had doctrine. It's kind of the Buddha forming those lists. He's forming those doctrines, but he's speaking off the cuff. To just people, there is no Buddhism yet, but there is a Buddha and there is truth. And so he is trying to explain it. And this is the place where he finds some very relatable expressions of the teaching. And this is one right here at the end of this collection of teachings here. And the Buddha says in verses, he says, sights, sounds, tastes, smells, tactile sensations and ideas, the lot of them, they're likable, desirable, and pleasurable, as long as you can say that they exist. For all the world with its gods, this is what they deem happiness. And where these things cease is deemed as suffering for them. The noble ones have seen as happiness the ceasing of a substantial reality. This insight by those who see contradicts the whole world. What others say is happiness, the noble ones say is suffering. What others say is suffering, the noble ones know as happiness. See, this teaching is hard to understand. It confuses the ignorant. There is darkness for the shrouded, blackness for those who don't see. But the good are open, like light for those who see. Though closed, they do not understand those fools inexpert in the teaching. They're mired in desire to be reborn, flowing along the stream of lives, mired in Mara's sway. This teaching isn't easy for them to understand. Who, apart from the noble ones, is qualified to understand the state? Having rightly understood this state, the undefiled become fully extinguished. And extinguished is Nibbana. A simple verse, or the Buddha is saying that something happens when one starts to get this teaching, and that something spins around in the mind. Whereas before we looked at things providing our happiness, I got this thing, therefore I'm happy. This thing happened for me, therefore I'm happy. This thing is going to happen, therefore I am excited. Something changes in the mind when we start to see suffering and the cause of suffering. We start to see how it wraps its tendrils into all the various aspects of our life. And we begin to see that things are heavy, things can be a burden. More things usually means more complexity, more suffering, it just by their very nature. And we start to yearn for peace. So that there's only one place for that to be found. There has to be less of these burdensome things. And as we start to understand that as the sources of our suffering begin to cease, begin to disappear, there is more peace. And with more peace, there is more room for happiness, which is the absence of suffering. And more, the mind will start to incline to look for cessation at to the point where a person who has understood or even just glimpsed Nibbana will be able to perceive cessation all around them. The average person will be like, oh, there's so much happening. But the noble one will say, but there's so much not happening. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely delightful. Because you can have lots of stuff. But no matter how much stuff you have, you will never equal the amount of not stuff that is present. And that's something we can always turn our mind to. That said, let's address the elephant in the corner, which is this word, Nirodha. And what does it actually mean? Because it gets used in a lot of technical ways. And if you've seen these technical ways, like independent origination, be like, okay, well, I guess I'll get this when ignorance ceases, causing sankharas to cease, and when sankharas cease, and therefore consciousness ceases. When all that happens, then I will get this. It sounds out there. But yeah, it's actually it's more straightforward. This is something that's happening all of the time, and it's the breaking point of whether or not we get what this teaching is for. So let's really get this word Nirodha. So the tradition is we use cessation, and this is a good word. So the Buddha in the Buddhist time, let's set the scene. Say you have a courtyard of a palace, and in this courtyard of the palace you have a palm tree, and as the palace begins to grow and expand and new wings are put on, suddenly you realize the palm tree is in a really bad spot. It's blocking traffic, it doesn't match the current layout of things, and so you decide you've got to get rid of this palm tree. The nature of palm trees is you just cut it off, it's going to spring up again and you'll have a whole new one. So cutting it off and making a stump is not good enough. In order to be sure that you don't get more and more palm trees in this spot, you cut it off, but then you set fire to the stump until that fire burns down through all the different roots and kills, absolutely destroys the plant. And then what you've still got, you've got a lump of charcoal basically sitting in the middle of your courtyard. So then you've got to, kind of dig up as much of that as you can, scatter it around, pile more dirt in, cover it back up to the point where you can say there will be no more palm trees in that spot. That palm tree has been destroyed, obliterated, not subject to future arising. And this is the simile the Buddha uses several times, talking about the cessation of craving. And this is what Nirodha means. The root verb is nirujati, which means to obliterate or destroy. And yeah, it's a pretty intense word. And often we feel pretty intensely towards our suffering and we want to destroy it. But in terms of understanding what is the happiest and most liberating of the noble truths, sometimes that word of destroy or obliterate, it seems like work. And the problem is the focus when we say cessation in the English language tends to be on there is something and it ends. Because we are beings moving through time, we mark things happening by the flow of time. So I will try to do this. I've got to do it in reverse, but I will try to do it. So when we say cessation, we think there is an orange line, right? There is an orange line, there is an orange line, and then it ceases, right? And we can mark the point that it ceases. But when we think about I'm back. You can hear me? Yeah, I could make a joke about my connection ceasing, but let's just carry on. All right. Again, try to do this in reverse. Okay. We're talking cessation, right? You have a thing, the thing ends. Cessation ceases. This works for us in time and space. And it also is not, it's pretty true to the word and the meaning of the word. There is a thing that stops. But the relationship in the Pali language to negatives is a bit different than in English. It was a bit more fluid. So for them, they could probably think of this without having to think of the thing itself as being there until it stopped. So another way that Nirodha is sometimes pointed to, and I in the references, a little bit of an essay by Prapayuto as he talks about this, is to speak of it as non-arising. So this is what we're really getting at. It's not simply that there was a thing and now it stopped, but what we're looking for is the fact that it's not showing up. We're looking to that place where, oh, there could be a thing here, but it's not here. But again, we get stuck in this kind of trap where, okay, there's no thing here. This is the non-arising of an orange line. This is a non-arising of an, oh, there it arose. Yeah. Our mind is anticipating something being there. It is noting the absence through looking at the object. Yeah. It only gets to think of this because of the thing itself. It's like, I know that there's no orange line here, but only because of the possible existence of an orange line. It's looking for the arising and not seeing it. Therefore, okay, non-arising. This is also not the worst. But the way I'd encourage us to look at it today is to, and I'm going to switch between these because, again, tradition, we've been using cessation, and I'm not going to change the translation, is to maybe think of it as absence. Because in the English language, this most perfectly conveys what we're looking for. We're not looking for the ending of something, because if you sit in your meditation staring at something, waiting for it to cease, I guarantee you will not see it cease. Because you will be focusing on the object, and the moment it does cease, if it does, which is most things that you're staring at don't wink out of existence. But if it does, then you won't notice because your mind was focused on an object and then the object is gone. It will look for a new object and you won't even realize it made the switch. You don't even realize you started thinking about lunch because the thing that you were paying attention to ended. And if you look for non-arising, then you're spending your whole meditation just like waiting for this thing that can cause you suffering. That's also not the best state to be in, right? I mean, you might as well just have the state. At that point, you'd be like, oh, I can't wait till this thing arises so I can stop looking for it and anticipating it. That'll be a relief. Yeah. But when we talk about absence, talk about the absence of craving, the absence of suffering, the absence of desire. Well, this is the absence of an orange line. Yeah, it's not, we're not looking for emptiness. We're not looking for nothing. We're just looking for all of the things that are not the orange line. There is stuff in cessation. It's just there's not that thing that was there. And so your mind can have objects to look at. Your mind can have objects to contemplate, but it will be able to do this in order to process what isn't there. It'll be like, all of these things are not orange. They are not orange lines. Look at all of the things that are not orange lines. All of these things are not dependent on that. The things that cause that to happen are not causing it to happen right now. It's gone. And we say at that point, it's obliterated. And there's no remainder because, in my little doodle, there's no orange line. Just, it's not behind the house. It's not hiding. It's not buried under the dirt waiting to, for one of those people to trip on it. It's gone. It's not there. There's an absence of the orange line. Yeah. And this is how we can start thinking about it. The Buddha, this is an important concept. And so he puts it in an important place. Yeah. Nirodha, cessation. This is the third noble truth. This is, in some ways, it's the precursor to Nibbana, to the actual experience of liberation. Is seeing that the cause of suffering can cease, and with it, the whole mechanism of rebirth ceases. The whole mechanism of suffering ceases, ends, is obliterated. But for people moving through time, we have to ask the question of, like, how do I see this for myself? How do I have an experience of cessation? And we have to train ourselves to look for the absence of things. And this is not something that will happen just because we sit in meditation. It is not a guarantee that if we do the precepts, we will experience cessation. It's not a guarantee that if we give offerings to a temple, we will experience and understand Nirodha. This only comes about when, by hearing the teaching, by understanding the direction of the teaching, we begin to use our mind to look for the absence of suffering. And when we do that, we will see it. Because it is not possible that any of you right now are experiencing in this moment the full breadth and depth of the suffering of which you are possible. There is a lot of suffering that is absent from your experience right now. And just taking a moment and looking at that and understanding that gives you an understanding of, oh, to that degree, I am happy. To that degree, I am relieved. To that degree, I am safe. Now, of all the different things that are not present right now, all the different kinds of suffering that are not present right now. We've been talking a lot about faith and overcoming doubt and, you know, getting an experience of the teaching and getting grounded these last couple of months. And this is one of the best ways to do it, looking at the ways that suffering ends and what is still here when it does. We're not staring off into a void. We're looking at all of the components of life that just keep going based on their own causes and conditions, even when craving, clinging, attachment, and identification have ceased, have ended, are no longer present. So yeah, how to do that. I thought maybe we'll do a guided meditation. We don't usually do that. Usually I ramble for a bit. I read some suttas and then we all kind of break and go in different directions. But we'll maybe take a little 5-minute intermission if you want to get up and get ready. So I'm just bringing this on you. And then when we come back, I'll give maybe a little half hour meditation with some guidance to kind of walk us through, you know, a couple of reflections to look at for the morning specifically, you know, just looking at anything, understanding Nirodha for anything. It doesn't matter if we're looking at Nirodha of our toaster that just stopped working this morning, or if we're looking at Nirodha of, you know, taxes, or we're looking at Nirodha of, you know, our fear of bagels. It's completely irrational fear, so nobody probably has it, but it's absent, right? Seeing the absence of anything will help us figure out how to train our minds to do that, to look for that. So often we're training our mind to in good ways, to look for things to be grateful for, to look for things to appreciate, to look for things wrong or displeasing with something so that we can give up attachment to it. Yeah, we're training our mind to look at things. This is a whole different exercise to train our minds to see the absence of things that vex us. Yeah, and to be okay with it, to kind of settle in that space and understand that, oh, there is no burden when there is no suffering. In this absence, there is a lightness and a freedom. Okay, so we'll take a little intermission, then we'll come back 5 minutes.